Episode 182 of the Nerd by Word sees Dave and myself talking about our favorite video game characters of all time. The byword begins now. Welcome to episode 182 of the Nerd by Word. This is take two of this episode. We originally recorded an entire episode reviewing Madam Web, and we lost the audio for my part. And I'm going to be real with you guys. It's probably for the best because I tried to re-record it, but putting myself in the headspace to revisit that movie, it was not a good thing. So we are pivoting and we are talking about things that we actually enjoy. We're talking about our favorite video game characters of all time, personal favorites. But first, as always, we're nothing if not consistent. It is time for Nerd News! Dave, so let me get this straight. The evil Spider-Man trope didn't work?
Superman, you mean?
Evil Superman. Yeah, that's what I meant.
Yes, turns out that in video game news, since we're talking about video games today extensively anyways, it turns out that Suicide Squad Kill the Justice League has apparently, quote-unquote, fallen short of our expectations, according to a Warner Brothers Discovery Shamalama Ding Dong executive. So I'm looking at an article here published on IGN by Wesley Yin Poole, who writes, speaking during a financial call, Warner Brothers Discovery chief financial officer Gunnar Weidenfels admitted Rocksteady's game hadn't done the business the company had hoped for since going on sale on February 2nd, priced at $70, saying it has fallen short of our expectations. The article goes on to say, Warner Brothers Discovery failed to mention a sales figure for Rocksteady's game, but did say Suicide Squad's failure had set up the company's game business for a tough year-on-year comparison. Last year, of course, Warner Brothers Discovery released Hogwarts Legacy, which became the best-selling game of 2023. According to Weidenfels, here's a quote, "This year, Suicide Squad, one of our key video game releases in 2024, has fallen short of our expectations since its release earlier in the quarter, setting our games business up for a tough year-over-year comparison in quarter one." Now, it turns out Steam is a really good indicator for sort of these live service games because Steam will show you how many players are actually actively playing the game. The game started, it actually peaked at only 13,459 concurrent players, but that was at the beginning after it first launched. It turns out that the lowest player count as of recording right now was 480 concurrent players on Steam, which is mind-blowingly low for a live service game like this. So in short, it's definitely fair to say it's fallen short of Warner Brothers Discovery's expectations. What makes this particularly rough, I think, is that this is a Rocksteady game. And Rocksteady, of course, is a developer that, you know, skyrocketed to the top of the heap when it comes to superhero-based video games with its Arkham series, right? Arkham Asylum was a breath of fresh air in you know, comic book superhero-based video games. And it's arguable that Arkham City sort of perfected the formula, although to me it kind of got bogged down in minutiae as far as like collectibles and stuff.
Yes.
And they did have
Arkham Knight.
Yeah, there was sort of a first taste of backlash with Arkham Knight, particularly with how the Batmobile was integrated into the gameplay and how bad the PC port was when it first launched. But now it seems like Rocksteady has kind of gone through a fall from grace with the Suicide Squad Kill the Justice League. There's been a lot of backlash against the game regarding story points, which I don't want to get into too deep spoiling here. let's just say that most of the Justice League characters end up being bad guys because they're being mind controlled, and this is why the Suicide Squad has to try to kill them. So we got basically an inversion of all the superheroes being evil. There's a sense among comic book fans already that that's kind of getting tiresome. You know, the hero's gone bad thing, particularly with a character like Superman, has become sort of a tired trope, on its own. The fact that this is a live service game, but at the same time, it also purports to be in the same universe as the Arkham games and does some stuff with the Arkham Batman that a lot of fans didn't enjoy. It seems like just a deck was stacked against it in a lot of ways. And here we are, we can question whether it was the story decisions that they made, whether they trying to link it to the Arkham series was a bad move. Or ultimately, if we're just starting to see sort of a slow moving backlash against these live service games without major single player content. I know I've kind of grown weary of them. I was not a huge fan of those kinds of games to begin with, but I've dabbled in a few of them, and I can see the fun. But ultimately, for an old school gamer like me, you put a single player campaign up against a live service game like this, and I'm going to go with the single player campaign every time. So, what ultimately did it in? Who knows? But it's far from successful at this point.
I mean, I didn't expect great things coming from this game. To begin with, I knew immediately from its announcement, I was not interested. I was not going to be purchasing it. It's funny how some of these companies can be so tone deaf and go out of their way not to listen to fans. Like, shouldn't we, just hear me out, shouldn't we have at least a Justice League game so we can establish the importance of this group? And before we have a game where we tear down said Justice League, I don't know, maybe I'm crazy. I think there's also a growing fatigue of the whole bad guys gone good. Maybe that's just me. I think James Gunn's Suicide Squad was enjoyable enough. But you had, that awful original Suicide Squad, which is now trying to get behind another hashtag. You have Marvel's version of that with the Thunderbolts in development hell. Like, I think we've oversaturated the entire trope and idea of this, and it's I don't know. I really think that you should maybe just start listening to fans and what fans are wanting, because I know they promoted the crap out of this, because watching, WWE was a major every time everything was brought to you by this game. And I think you should probably just start listening to what fans actually want in a video game like this.
Yeah, that seems fair. And I think your news story is going to go a long way towards something that fans have actually been asking for. So let's go ahead and pivot, because I'm very curious to talk about this one.
So this comes after I just bought, albeit for $5 a piece, the original versions for backwards compatibility, something we have praised Xbox for. The OG Battlefront Star Wars games are getting re-released and remastered. The Star Wars Battlefront Classic Collection is coming to Switch, PS4 and 5, Xbox One, Series S and X, and PC. Via Steam on March 14th as a bundle with both of the original games, some new maps and new characters, including Kit Fisto, personal fave, and Asajj Ventress, another personal fave. You get Jabba's Palace as a playable level. They are retooling some of the original hero mode game mode, so that's super exciting. It has been a long-charted, well-documented frustration when it comes to Star Wars fans, since Electronic Arts has kind of gotten the rights to Star Wars, and there are elements of those Battlefront games that I enjoyed, but nothing reaches the peak of how perfect these games were for me growing up in high school, and I really greatly enjoyed them. And I fired up the original editions that I just bought, and it was like putting on an old glove, and it was great. And so even though I just dropped $10 on these two, I'm definitely looking forward to March 14th and getting this remastered edition.
Yeah, I think it's been a pretty well-known and well-documented fact at this point that, you know, the Star Wars games took a little while to warm up under the EA license, right? Once EA got the license, and their attempts to kind of revitalize the Battlefront games were not all that well received by fans with the newer Battlefront games. So a lot of people have been doing what you've been doing, is playing the older games on backwards compatibility, right? And so putting a fresh coat of paint on these, so to speak, and really enabling sort of large-scale multiplayer for them again and everything is actually a really, really smart decision, I think. These are real classic games. I enjoyed these a great deal. Although they were not at the top of my heap when it came to Star Wars games back in the day, I did really, truly enjoy them. I was really partial, actually, to Shadows of the Empire and the N64. And I really played just played the crap out of the Rogue Squadron games that were developed by, I think, Take Five were the developers on those. Also, they were on the N64 and the GameCube. Those were fantastic, fantastic games. So I'm really partial, I think, to that generation of Star Wars games. I think they were just clicking in every single way there for a little while. Even the pod racing game during that generation was actually really good. Like, you know, as crazy as that is, that game actually still kind of holds up and is still fun too. So it was a really, really good time to be a Star Wars fan. And I do think they've rounded the corner a little bit with the modern Star Wars games. They've gotten, you know, significantly better as of late. But it's nice to still see some love for this generation of Star Wars games. They're just really good.
I'll go up for that second Battlefront from EA. I know that I was late to the party. I know that there was a lot of hubbub about characters not being available at release. By the time I came to the game, they had kind of fixed some of those complaints and made characters available. But I really enjoyed the campaign. I thought it was a really compelling story. And then I had some fun playing with my kids on the online version as well. So I really enjoyed that second Battlefront. The first one I got for $5 at GameStop, and it was $5 too many. Really did not enjoy that one at all. But I'm also contrarian, because I'm seeing a lot of love for Fallen Order and Jedi Survivor, and I enjoyed the first one enough, and I bought Jedi Survivor, and I really just hate the gameplay. The storytelling is magnificent. The acting is great. Voice acting's top-notch. I really hate that parkour gameplay. I hate respawn. I hate saving the game and meditating, and it respawns the enemies. I'm really just not a fan of them. So, and I know that I'm the exception to that. I will say that I'm definitely looking forward to that open world version that Ubisoft is making, whatever they're calling. I think it's something to do with thieves or something like that, but I'm very much looking forward to that. So I know I'm kind of an outlier when it comes to Star Wars games. All right, that wraps up a nerd news segment for this episode. When we come back, we are continuing to talk about video games that we love and characters that we love. Welcome back to the main segment of our program today. We call it our byword. And we are leaning full in to the mantra, the theme of video games today. We're talking our favorite video game characters. We are counting down 5 to 1 with our faves. If we have some overlap, that's great. But, you know, Dave likes the quirky stuff, so probably not. Dave, number 5. And I want to be clear on this. These are our favorites. This is not us gatekeeping, like, this is the best. And I don't know about you, Dave, but I abhor the hero versus hero debates. And I've seen far too many of those on the timeline here recently. So these are just
absolutely
personal favorites. So this, we're just talking about what we love. And if you love different things, God bless. Dave, Your number five, top five favorite character in video games.
Okay, so let's all remember that I'm a white man of a certain age, right? So some of my fondest gaming memories are still very closely connected to the Super Nintendo. That was sort of a golden age of gaming for me. And a game that has gone underappreciated and that I've previously spoken about on the pod, if you go back far enough, I think within the first year even that we've been doing this, was a game called Secret of Evermore. Secret of Evermore is an action role-playing game that was developed and published by Square for the Super Nintendo. It was released on October 17th, 1995. It was actually developed by the American branch of Square. So although it uses the same engine as the Secret of Mana game, the developers are very different and brought different sensibilities to the development. And I have to say, I like this game a lot. I've always enjoyed it a lot. I thought it was very, very well put together. I actually struggled a little bit connecting with Secret of Evermore because I found, Secret of Mana, because I found the characters to overall be pretty flat, especially early on. And Secret of Evermore brings a irreverence to the table and a sense of humor that I think is oftentimes lacking in action adventure and JRPG games. I do like a good sense of humor, and this brings that along in spades. So the character that really does it for me in this is actually the protagonist. You get to name him like you do in many other video games of this ilk. So I just will refer to him as the boy, because he is the boy from Secret of Evermore, essentially. But what I really love about this character is that even from the word go, from the first opening cutscene of the game, you immediately get a sense for what a weirdo this guy is, right? He is like coming out of a really rundown theater. He loves B movies of all ilk. He's basically
he's you.
If he's basically Mystery Science Theater 3000 rolled into a single character, and throughout the entire game, he very much encounters all this weirdness that he deals with sort of a oh well, here we go again kind of thing, because he's seen all of this weird stuff in B movies, and he's constantly referencing weird B movies that don't exist. So. You know, he talks about characters and stuff and movies that don't exist, but they make great, great jokes. Probably one of my favorite parts of the game is you have a dog, and in every era that you in the game that you end up with, every zone is like related to a different historical era, and so the game keeps like transforming the dog to look different in each zone you go to. And he has just such great deadpan comments every time the dog looks different. You know, and it's absolutely hilarious. So I just love the sense of humor of this character. And even after all these years, he's really stuck with me. And maybe that has something to do with my love of stuff like Mystery Science Theater 3000. But, you know, having a sense of humor about the kind of entertainment that you consume and kind of lacing references throughout everything you say to this entertainment that you like, that is something I think we both can relate to. And that was not really the popular thing in the 90s for a character to be like. I think this character would be much more successful right now. I think a lot of people would find this character much more relatable maybe than they did back then. I think there was a lot of comments back then that the humor was cringy and the characters weren't interesting, and I completely disagree with that. I think it captured something way ahead of its time with this character. So even though, you know, it's almost 30 years ago that this game was released, the character has stuck with me this whole time, and I really love the protagonist from Secret of Evermore.
That's so funny. I can't, like, I've never played this game, so I can't necessarily comment on it. But when you're talking about the name of the character, that definitely brings to mind one of my characters, because one of my characters has been masquerading as Chris for many of the iterations of his gaming history. So we've got a crisis of identity here.
Just so you can see, like, the how this humor resonates with me. There's a point in the game where somebody asks you what the name of your dog is, and then you, like, a box pops up and you get to name the dog right then and there in the middle of the game. Mm-hmm. Up until then, the character's been referring to the dog always as Buddy. And you can put in anything. This is like pre, locking certain names and filters and stuff. So you can have so much fun in that moment, because I would put stuff in there like Butt Biter. Because he's always, you know, the dog helps you in combat and is always attacking enemies. So I called him Butt Biter. And the other character, without missing a beat, then says, Butt Biter, that was the name of my grandmother. Like, that's the kind of sense of humor we're dealing with here, right? It just resonates with me. I love that really cheesy humor that you get out of this game and out of this character, just really do.
And I think I've shared this before on the show, but like, that's similar to what I do with Pokemon. I'm finishing up Brilliant Diamond right now on the Switch, and I like giving typically like elderly names to my Pokemon. Like my main, like I have an Infernape and his name is Chuck, so like, let's go Chuck, and like, you know, just, you know, let's go Nancy, you can do this. It's just
all right, Chris, so what is your number five favorite video game character of all time?
Well, I'm surprised that he's this low on my list, but I'm going with Kirby. I think just one of those iconic, and looking at this list, we're probably going to have a lot of Nintendo. I think when it comes to character-driven stories, when it comes to in video games, I think Nintendo makes us care about these characters, makes them iconic and identifiable. They're on merch everywhere, they're on t-shirts, and Kirby is one of those characters that's just simply iconic. And when you think of video games and you make a list, Kirby's not far down that list. First appeared in Kirby's Dream Land in 1992, was created by Masahiro Sakurai, voiced from 1999 till the present by Makiko Omoto. And I've played some of those Kirby Dream Land games, and it is fun. It's whimsical. It's very freewheeling. But I became mostly enamored with Kirby during the Super Smash Brothers iterations of games. It's one of the like starter characters that you can go with. So until you unlock other characters, you have 8 to 10 characters that you can choose from. And Kirby's one of the ones that I always start off the game with, because he's so diverse in his moveset. He can turn into different shapes. He can suck up the other characters and take on some of their movesets. It's just super fun character, and you cannot deny the influence and the popularity of Kirby. I mean, like, he's literally just like this cloud-looking guy, and it's so fun. And doesn't really talk, he just makes noises. So I love this guy.
Yeah, I'm really partial to the Kirby games myself. Always have. I enjoyed, you know, the initial Game Boy game quite a bit, although it was very short and kind of over quickly. But once we hit like the NES with Kirby's Adventure, it was, you know, love at first sight. That game just rocked, and I think holds up incredibly well today. And it kind of started a real love that I have for this character and these games. And even though he didn't quite make my top five characters, I have mad love for Kirby. I really do. And when there's a new Kirby game, I'm one of the first in line to play it.
All right, Dave, when I pitched this episode to you, I knew this character was going to be on your list.
Yeah, I mean, first of all, it's no secret that I absolutely love strong female characters, right? I mean, we have been there and chewed through that tendency of mine already. And of course, being a gamer of the generation that I am, you know, we were already talking about the mid-90s for me, it's not surprising that I ended up having mad love for Lara Croft Tomb Raider. So Lara Croft made her debut, obviously, in Tomb Raider, a 1996 action-adventure game developed by Core. It was published by Eidos Interactive back in the day. It was actually first released on the Sega Saturn, then later on got an MS-DOS version and ended up on PlayStation. And there was a pretty close, I guess, relationship, you can say. People ended up really associating the Tomb Raider games with PlayStation there for a while, especially that first initial run of games. But the character is just so interesting. What looks on the surface to be sort of a female version of Indiana Jones is actually a character with a really interesting and rich history, very unique reason for doing what she does, has very interesting adventures in these video games. And then in the more modern gaming age, obviously, went through a major reinvention where they actually, you know, added additional depth to the character and a longer backstory. And we had a whole trilogy of games there that were actually really good as well and played around with the, you know, with the gameplay a little bit. But, you know, in addition to that, I think it's undeniable that this character, you know, has a huge pop culture footprint. There was an absolutely fantastic Top Cow, you know, comic book series that I still revisit frequently because I really enjoy it. There was, you know, in Germany, there was a sort of punk rock band called Die Ärzte, loosely translated The Doctors. And they had a song that they released that featured literally like the actual like character model from the video games of Lara Croft in their music video. And it was like probably one of the most popular and most played music videos of that year in Germany. So it's just, this character just has a huge footprint, I think, in popular culture. And it's just, I think it's very well deserved. I think, you know, Lara Croft is a fantastic character when, you know, executed properly, you know, when done right. And so definitely my number four character in video games of all time.
So I think I've played that, like of all the video games, I've played that first Tomb Raider for all of 5 minutes, I think, on the original PlayStation. Very triangular in design in retrospect. I do remember being completely enamored with that first Angelina Jolie movie because I was a teenage boy, and who isn't enamored with Angelina Jolie? Just like the historical aspect, the like paleontological aspects of it, the world, the globe trotting was fascinating. Cradle of Life was fun. I haven't watched the Alicia Vikander film. I'm not sure. So I'm curious to see, Dave, what your thoughts are on those movies.
I think the first Tomb Raider was kind of fun, brainless fun for its time. I thought the second movie was a significant drop in quality. It was quite boring at the time, I thought. And then they did, you know, the more recent movie with Alicia Vikander as Lara Croft that was more based on the reboot video games, which I enjoyed and I thought was a good starting point for a movie franchise, but that never kind of materialized. But to me, like the peak of this character is in the video games and the comic books. I don't think an adaptation has really struck the perfect balance or the perfect chord with this character yet. If I want to get good Lara Croft, I am either in the video games or with the comic books from Top Cow from back in the day. All right, Chris, so what is your number four video game character of all time?
Well, I will see your badass woman and raise you with Sadie Adler, who is that for me. Red Dead Redemption 2, rightfully so, gets a lot of love when it comes to the campaign. There's a lot of fans of the online. Online's fun. Arthur Morgan gets a lot of love, and rightfully so. He has this like samurai lone gun type of vibe and a tragic story. But Sadie Adler completely captured my heart. In the storyline, she is rescued by the gang, and then she kind of goes through this transformation of character to really evolve. And I don't want to spoil too much, but she's just this really captivating spirit. She's feisty, spunky, and like the voice actress, Alex McKenna, is just top notch. Like, she's got this adorable little southern twang. You can't help but fall in love with the character. And so I absolutely love Sadie Adler. But props to Arthur Morgan, of course, but I needed a baddie on my list.
Yeah, so I have played Red Dead Redemption 2 for all of like 30 minutes, I think. And then kind of just fell off of it for, you know, personal life reasons. Just a lot of stuff going on that kept me busy otherwise, and I couldn't game a lot. But it's on my list of something that I definitely want to revisit. And it sounds to me like there's definitely some characters there that I'm going to really enjoy, Chris.
All right. You have talked up this game quite a bit on several different occasions, Dave, but I'm going to let you cook all the same.
Okay, yeah, I can't help talking about Life is Strange. yeah, it's a gaming series that I enjoy, but I can't lie, there is something really special about the first game, Life is Strange, and then the prequel, Life is Strange Before the Storm. For those of you that don't know, the Life is Strange games are kind of anthology style, so each game tends to follow different characters, but the first game and then its prequel specifically follow two characters, Max and Chloe. And then there is a comic book spin-off that is basically a sequel to those games, because obviously the video games moved on to different characters. And although I've played some of the others, I didn't quite connect with the characters as well. And so the character that really sings, I think, in those initial Life is Strange games is Chloe Price. Max Caulfield, who is the playable character in the first game, is all right. But Chloe Price is the character where it's at, as far as like, you know, real ethos and real interesting things happening. Here's a girl that has gone through a lot, has lost her father, has lost her girlfriend by the start of the first game, and is kind of hiding under this real like tough girl persona. There's a lot of talk among fans of the video games that her dialogue is really cringe and fake edgy, and I think that works really well for the character, especially once you play Before the Storm, because you realize that she was not that, right? She was not that rebel without a cause character, and she is putting on airs in a lot of ways by the time you hit the actual the first game. It is kind of fakey because she's kind of faking. And so just exploring that character through these games was always really affecting to me. It's one of the few games that I've played where the story was so engrossing and the characters I grew so attached to that, especially after I finished the first game, I just kind of sat there in stunned silence for a little while. And the game really stayed with me, right down to like the big choice you have to make at the end, which comes down to whether, you know, Chloe Price gets to live or not, you know. And then going into the prequel and seeing how she got to that point. She's just a fascinating character. Even the comic book, I think, did a really good job further delving into who she is and how she ticks. And it's just so regrettable to me in some ways that there's not room in that series to revisit those characters. It didn't hurt, especially in the first game, that Ashley Birchfield actually voiced her. And she's just a fantastic voice actress. She also voices another character that I really love that didn't quite make the list this time. And that is Aloy from the Horizon games.
I was shocked. I was shocked she was not there.
Yeah, but I just absolutely adore Ashley Birchfield's voice acting, period. But she really shines as Chloe Price. And so I'd love to get more. But, you know, Don't Nod has moved on in a lot of ways. And it's, you know, different teams have been working on sequels and stuff. And so it's a different ballgame with the Life is Strange franchise now. But there's something special about the Chloe Price character that I really love to revisit.
Yeah, this game has everything that I could want in a video game on it. And it's high time that I check it out. So your pitch has worked.
So what is your number three video game character of all time?
Listen, I like the little guys. I'm a Luigi over Mario guy. And give me Diddy Kong, man. I love Diddy. Like, when it comes to Smash Brothers, when it comes to Mario Kart racing, I am like, until they introduced Link, that was super fun. But Diddy Kong is like one of my mains. I love this dude. He's the secondary main protagonist, introduced in 1994's Donkey Kong Country, like one of the seminal video games, like one of the first video games that I ever played. And like, he emanates and oozes coolness, like a spider monkey in a baseball cap. Like, it doesn't get cooler than that. I was actually playing some Donkey Kong Country while I was waiting to start today's episode, thanks Switch Online. And just like that hand slap back and forth tag team style, like, it was so fresh and fun to me. It was a little frustrating, you know. Super Mario World was the first video game that I remember playing, and I wanted to be Luigi. But you can only be Luigi if you have two players. And so the fact that you could be both Donkey and Diddy Kong in Donkey Kong Country was such a breath of fresh air to me. And I just love this little guy.
Yeah, I can't argue with Diddy Kong. Actually, my contact with the Kongs was not on the Super Nintendo. I never really played the Donkey Kong Country games or even Diddy Kong Racing until much later on re-releases and the like. But I played the Donkey Kong Land games on Game Boy, and I preferred Diddy Kong vastly over Donkey Kong. Just handled much better. And has a much more interesting and much cooler attitude. So it's one of those cases where sometimes just a sidekick is more interesting to me than the main character sometimes. I also, as a kid, really liked Robin better than Batman in some ways, right? So I definitely see the appeal of Diddy Kong.
Yeah, which makes number two on your list all the more surprising.
Part of this could very well be nostalgia, Chris. I'm not going to lie. There is a nostalgic element to this. I always loved Mario. Mario is just a character that, you know, meant a lot to me when I was a kid. When I got my first video game system that was my own, it was a Game Boy. The very first game that I ever played on it was Super Mario Land. I still have a huge soft spot for that game, even though, you know, it had a lot of limitations for the time as programmers were still figuring out how to even program for something like the Game Boy. But I just have mad love for Mario. Mario was just a character that was a real gateway drug for me into the world of video gaming in a lot of ways. And, you know, you had to be there when, you know, Mario Mania was hitting, when, you know, Super Mario Brothers 3 came out on the NES, when you had the Super Mario Brothers Super Show. You know, you could get Mario cereal in the store. I was a member of Club Nintendo, which had got a little membership card with a picture of Mario holding a mushroom on it, right? You know, and even the Mario character today, although he has a lot in common with the original Mario, there are things that have changed about the character. And I still love that Mario. I still love Mario today very much. But there is something special to me, I guess, about that time period and the cultural impact that Mario had at the time and the personal impact that Mario had on me. I mean, good God, when the N64 came out, you know, Super Mario 64 was one of the most revolutionary things I'd ever seen in my life. You know, how they made the leap from 2D to 3D gaming. Mario as a character is just a, I guess, a part of my personal history to such an extent that it's undeniable that he's up there for me as one of the prime video game characters.
Yeah, and you can't argue with that. I think if, you know, we made this list completely subjective with our favorites, but if you were to remove the subjectivity, be completely objective, I think you'd be hard-pressed to find a video game character that has more of a lasting impact than Mario.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely fair. And you know, there are so many things about that age of video games that is, you know, significantly different from how it is today, obviously. But I have such a fondness for that time, you know, pre-online gaming, split screen couch co-op stuff, and you know, Mario to me is the epitome of that era of video gaming. And although he's, you know, as a character has very much made the leap into modern gaming and is very popular still, you know, Mario Kart games are still rolling. He's still getting solo adventures, 50 billion spin-offs. You know, nothing's really changed in that regard. To me, he is the symbol of a bygone age of video gaming in a lot of ways.
I mean, he's still the standard. We just had Wonder released and... No, now you can be an elephant as Mario and Luigi and everybody. So, I mean, like, it's still like the market standard for characters in video games, I think.
Yeah. And one of the few, I think, like platforming mascots of that era that made the leap and was able to continue on into modern gaming. So many of those mascots have fallen by the wayside. And even like the closest competition would probably be something like Sonic, but Sonic has become so derided in a lot of ways because the games are so hit and miss over the last, you know, few gaming generations, that I would say that it's a no contest at this point that Mario's definitely taken the lead there.
And I think it's funny because I had a self-imposed rule here that I wanted to choose characters that were introduced in video games, so that's why I didn't choose any of the characters from The Witcher, for example, because they began in the novels.
Yeah.
And so it's funny because I was looking at a lot of lists and doing research, and you know, Sonic obviously pops up on a lot of those lists, and I was like, man, I really just associate Sonic with those animated series because I never had a Sega Genesis. And so like I knew enough. I had played a little bit of Sonic here and there, but I had always associated him with the animated series growing up.
Yeah, yeah, I can see that. All right, Chris, so that brings us to your number two video game character of all time, and I am not surprised about this selection.
This is my guy, okay? And up until the last few weeks and months, like, this was my number one with a bullet or with a hidden blade. Ezio Auditore da Firenze, that's my guy. I love him. He's one of the just coolest characters in any kind of media. Like, he starts off, and I think the common thread as I look through at least most of my picks, some of them are just fun. Like Kirby, I don't know if he has an overarching character arc that's really just life-changing, or Diddy Kong, but dang it, they're fun. But I think one of the common things, and as I said, I removed some of the Witcher characters because you could easily throw these in the same basket, is I like character arcs. I like watching my characters go through a journey, because if it's well told and if it's well done, I feel like I have also gone through that journey. I love Arthur Morgan's story in Red Dead Redemption 2. I love Geralt's trajectory. But that the reason I didn't include Geralt is because it's hard for me to separate the novels from the games. And Ezio is very much that. You have this freewheeling playboy in Renaissance Italy who goes through a series of tribulations, and he has to grow up really, really fast. Originally introduced in Assassin's Creed 2 in 2009. Also, when it comes to Assassin's Creed franchise, which I have been no stranger about how much I love, it's really hard-pressed to have a character with staying power like that. So you've got him in Assassin's Creed 2 and 2 Discovery. You've got him coming up in Assassin's Creed Brotherhood, Revelation, even the animated short Embers. So it's hard. You'd be hard-pressed to find an Assassin's Creed character, perhaps Altair, the original assassin, to have that kind of lasting power. Usually with these Assassin's Creed characters, they're like a one-off game character. And so I just think like it's a really captivating hero's journey to watch him and encounter some of my favorite periods of history, the Renaissance Italy, the Inquisition. You have him interacting with the Borgias. You have him interacting with Niccolo Machiavelli. Like, this is a tour de force character for me, and I love this guy.
Yeah, I'm not surprised by this. So I never finished the entire trilogy that featured him. I only played, I think, Assassin's Creed 2 that featured him, and liked it a great deal. You know, there's so many Assassin's Creed games, and although I try to go back and kind of catch up through the older ones, it's not always that easy to find the time, you know. But I definitely see the appeal of this character. He's absolutely fascinating, and I think a step up from Altair in a lot of ways from the first Assassin's Creed. I think he's a much more interesting character, and that's one of the pulls, I think, for me to eventually go back and finish, I think it was Brotherhood and Revelation, the other two games that featured him. They're on my shelf, and you know, I got them already on my backwards compatible Xbox and everything. I just need to sit down and actually, you know, do it.
Yeah, if you don't already have them, the Ezio collection you can find is a great deal. It has all three of those games, including some of the DLCs, I think. So, yeah, definitely worth your time. It's just finding that time, like you said. Dave, I'm very surprised by your number one pick here. Talk to me about it.
Yeah, so I do nothing but aim to surprise. So my number one video game character of all time is Clementine from the Walking Dead video games published by Telltale. So Clementine is sort of the through line through all the mainline Walking Dead Telltale games. She starts off in season one as the non-playable co-lead, although you get to, I think, control her for part of a flashback. She's the main lead and playable character in season two. Then she's the non-playable co-lead for season three again. And then finally in season four, she is the playable protagonist again. And look, I've professed my love for the Walking Dead comic book many times. And I know that what they have done to the franchise on TV is definitely made it sort of wore out at this point. I think it's kind of wore out its welcome in a lot of ways. And I think that's totally fair. As an adaptation, it's very hit or miss. Whereas I have mad love for the comic. But I think the thing that connected with me the most in the entire Walking Dead franchise are those Telltale games. I think they're amazing. I absolutely adore those games. And the through line for those games is Clementine. You know, you meet Clementine as a scared 8-9-year-old little girl, and the playable character in the first game, Lee Everett, kind of takes her under his wing and is trying to protect her, and that does not come to a good end for him. Light spoiler warning there. And then you kind of you kind of watch her grow up across these games and trying to make her way in this, you know, post-apocalyptic world overrun by zombies, and the choices she has to make to try to survive, and ultimately taking somebody under her wing by season four, at which point she's 16 and she's trying to protect a little kid herself, and kind of comes full circle. This is a character that goes through massive growth from game to game, that really is going through that journey like you were talking about, that you always look for in characters like this. And I know there's supposed to be a comic book now released that features her. It'll be the first Walking Dead comic book that actually features her as a character and kind of makes her, I guess, canonical to the Walking Dead comic book world. And I think that's amazing, and I can't wait to read that comic. She is by far the singular most compelling character to come out of the Walking Dead franchise, if you ask me. And is, you know, everything that I said, for example, about Chloe Price in Life is Strange, Clementine takes that up to 11. Her story is incredibly affecting. It stays with you. You really feel like this is a real person. The writing for her is very, very strong. The voice acting by Melissa Hutchinson is absolutely flawless. It's just an absolute pitch-perfect character for this sort of post-apocalyptic tale. And just seeing her go through that journey across those four games is one heck of a ride. So yeah, to me, as far as like a character, not maybe the most iconic character or the most well-known character in all of video games, but on a personal level, probably the most fascinating and the most affecting is definitely Clementine.
I think you nailed it for me as to why I've avoided a lot of The Walking Dead. I remember watching, I think, some of season three from the sidelines, seeing people become worn out by the entire experience has kind of made me not dive in, not read the comic, not play the games. But I remember I deeply loved the Batman Telltale games, and I think I played even a little bit of the Guardians of the Galaxy one. So based on this glowing recommendation of yours, I think I may have to bite the bullet on this, though.
And there is a collection of all the Walking Dead Telltale games that you can now buy in one nice package. And you should be able to catch it on a pretty good deal at this point. I purchased the games both on Steam, so I can play them on my Steam Deck, and on Xbox. And I do occasionally dive back in. But the nice thing is, even if you've never sat down and like read the Walking Dead comic books, there are some characters that occasionally pop up as side characters from the comic book and then disappear again. But the narrative of Clementine and her story stands on its own, which means you don't need to have read the comic or watched a TV show or anything. This is straight up like, you don't need any background. You can just jump in and play. All right, Chris. So I saw that this was your number one, and I very purposefully left him off of my list because of that, because I didn't feel the need to double up, but I can totally see why he'd be your number one.
Well, we could take the next hour and talk about this. This is the whole reason I wanted to make this episode, and I pitched it to you. Let's talk about our boy Link. I mean, Yeah, he masqueraded as Chris for several games, but yeah, I think his name is Link. I just love this guy. It takes a special type of character for me to go and try and do a completely comprehensive character replay, go back and play games I never played. Breath of the Wild really shook me. And Tears of the Kingdom subsequently, like Tears of the Kingdom and Breath of the Wild, they're, you know, they go hand in hand, of course, because they're tied together. But like, it's one of those games where you go through withdrawal syndromes after you're done with it. Like I've been really struggling to find another game that really captures my energy, really captures my attention since I finished it. I've tried to go back and through Nintendo Switch Online play the much adored Ocarina of Time. I know everyone loves it. I never got to play it because I didn't have an N64. I've talked about how difficult it is because of the controls. Also, just kind of transporting my entire mindset back to 1998 when it comes to video games. It's very, 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 very different. I'm having to have the Switch in one hand and have my phone in the other as I'm looking up where to find every doggone thing to get me through a level. This guy, I'm telling you, it's really cool to see like such a deep mythos around this character. As like, it's just incredible to see such a history with this character, and it never seems to end. Like, it continually will reinvent itself, and it's just crazy. And I'm gonna pitch to you, because you have much longer history with this character, that like I just keep coming back for more, and I can't get enough.
Well, I think what works really well about Link is that he is both a blank slate for the character to project themselves onto, and at the same time, despite the fact that he never speaks, comes with just a crap ton of personality, right?
Yeah.
It's an incredible balance that they've struck with this character at Nintendo, to be both sort of a blank slate and at the same time have just a ton of personality. It's one heck of a tightrope that they walk with this character. Always loved Link. The original Legend of Zelda and Zelda 2, The Adventure Link on the NES, are very tough games, both. And so I played them some, but never completed them as a kid. My love affair with Link sort of started with Link to the Past on the Super Nintendo. Yeah, and then obviously a Link's Awakening on the Game Boy, because I was a Game Boy kid. You know, that was my main machine for a while. But man, Ocarina of Time, you know, again, you have to transport yourself back to those to the 90s there, but that thing blew everything out of the water. It was just such an epic adventure and so different from anything that's come before, as far as like visuals. I know today you look at it and you think it's kind of an ugly game, especially the original N64 graphics, but holy crap, were we not blown away by that, you know? And so that really is where I kind of just absolutely fell head over heels for Zelda, was Ocarina of Time and then Majora's Mask. I still ride for those games, absolutely. And now even going all the way up through Breath of the Wild, and yeah, I have not played Tears of the Kingdom yet, but the Breath of the Wild Link is again a really interesting variant of the Link character. Yeah, I totally agree with you, man. There's just something about Link as a character that you just want to keep coming back to. And when you don't have a Link game in your life, you want another Link game in your life, you know? Yeah. So, it's funny because I just had a memory pop up on a social media platform, and it was like 7 years ago, you were playing The Legend of Zelda Ocarina of Time 3D. You know? And I'm like, yes, I was. Might need to do that again. So yeah, I really also ride for the 3DS remake, the 3D version there. Even if you played without the 3D effect, I just think they did a really, really nice graphical overhaul on the game while still keeping most of the gameplay in place. So if the N64 visuals are a little too ugly for you these days, that is a really good alternative, I think, as a way of experiencing the game.
And I think one of the things that speaks to his staying power is the fact that we can have so many different versions, visually speaking, of the character. I mean, Smash Brothers alone, you can have Toon Link, you can have regular Link. And the same with Mario, like Mario Kart 8, the Switch version, is you can be the classic Link, the Hylian green suit Link, or you can be the Breath of the Wild Link with the like the sky blue. And yeah, I think you absolutely nailed it with the silent protagonist, and yet there's still something so deeply kind of spiritual in that, and like some of the lore in mythology gets really deep into that with the reincarnation of him being reborn to fight off the great evil of Ganondorf or Ganon, and always finding the Master Sword one way or another. And I think even through, if you take out like, oh, the graphics look like this, the graphics look like that, regardless, it gives you some of the most beautiful visuals in video games. Like when I finished Tears of the Kingdom and Breath of the Wild, like I just sat back there. I never skip a cutscene or anything, and especially not during those games, because it's some of the most beautiful stuff that you'll ever see in the medium of video games. And even I've gotten through the first couple of parts of Ocarina of Time, and even like the Deku Tree, like telling the story of the creation of the universe, that stuff is absolutely stunning, even through those graphics. Absolutely stunning visually.
Yeah, it's hard to argue with that. And I think, you know, an argument can be made that Mario has probably changed very little since the old days, but Link has gone through a whole evolution while still keeping that core of who the character is, that silent protagonist. And like you said, a lot of visual stuff, a lot of visual information about his world or him has changed and gone through all these different incarnations, but still holds true to a core that that keeps bringing people back. So it's a remarkable character, I think, in the annals of video game history.
And I think the final nail in the coffin that puts him at the top of my list is the level of inspiration of just like, it's laughable. Of course, this little kid or this young man, based on your iteration of the character, this kid with a sword and a shield, sometimes a wooden shield, going up against the embodiment of evil. He has no chance, and yet he always triumphs. And I think that you'd be hard pressed to find a better inspirational story in video games. All right, that wraps up our Byword Big Talk. When we come back from this, our final break, we are nerd commending things that we love and we want to share with you. Welcome back to the final segment of the Nerd By Word, where we recommend stuff that we enjoy and think you will too. We call it Nerd Commendations. All right, Dave, I did not see this one coming. You constantly, consistently surprise me.
Yeah. Little known fact about poor old little moi, but when I was a kid in the 90s in Germany, I religiously played Magic the Gathering. It's really the only sort of card battler that I got into, whereas a lot of my friends were into, playing Pokemon. I was a Magic the Gathering kid. I absolutely adored the game. I built my own decks religiously, collected cards. It was definitely my jam for a little while. And like so many other things that you absolutely love, you eventually fall away from it because, you know, real life catches up with you. You're not a kid anymore. You don't have all that free time. You get busy. And I didn't get a chance to play Magic the Gathering much anymore. And if I'm completely honest, there are not a lot of people in my personal life these days that would even sit down and play Magic the Gathering with me. You know, it's kind of an involved game, and it's an investment. And so I really had an itch to play again, and did some research and found that there is actually an official Magic the Gathering app. It's called Magic the Gathering Arena, and it is available on mobile platforms. You can get it on your phone, on your tablet, you can play it on a Chromebook, and it's actually quite good. Like so many other of these sort of free games that you can download, there is definitely a sort of you know, pay track that you can go on if you want to buy things, you know, within app purchases or stuff. But I'll tell you that I'm like just like a stinker when it comes to that kind of stuff. And I just do not spend money on anything in app purchases. You know, I just play on the free tier and have some fun with it. And I find that this actually works extremely well. You can play against a computer system for like training. You get to, you know, connect via server to random people across the world that are supposed to be sort of on your skill level, and you can play against other people, which is really, really practical for somebody who doesn't have a lot of people around him that play this game these days. It actually, the app runs quite well. The server seems pretty smooth for the most part. Every once in a while you have, you know, disconnects and stuff, but that's not super frequent and, you know, not any different from any other online game that you're going to play. And you get to, you know, build your own deck, you know, victories give you some cards that you can then integrate in your deck. You know, you start getting access to different cards and stuff, and you can improve your various decks. You can build more than one deck. You can experiment with deck building in the game. And I find it incredibly relaxing. You know, you can go on there and spend 10, 15 minutes playing a quick game of Magic and then move on with life. And it's pretty well, you know, stocked with players, I would say. I've never had a major problem finding a game when I wanted to play. So, you know, just part of this is nostalgia, of course, because I always loved that game, but it's also really nice to be able to revisit it with a much lower entry point. You know, instead of like having to buy and trade all these various cards, you just do this digitally. There's no entry fee. You know, you don't have to spend money to download the app or anything. And if you want to go completely free with it, you can. It's absolutely doable. And it's just a lot of fun, man. As far as card battlers go, I still ride for Magic. I think it's still a ton of fun, even though it's gone through a whole bunch of different iterations since I played as a kid. It's still very recognizable. And you know, you still get the rules pretty quickly if you've played it before. So if you've ever wanted to dip your toe into Magic as a game, and were ever curious about it at all, I think Magic the Gathering Arena is about the perfect entry point. What a time to be alive, you know? When I was a kid, something like this would have been amazing to have on a home device, you know, but didn't really exist back then. So it's amazing to actually play this as a digital sort of card game. So I'm a big fan. I think highly, highly recommended, really.
This is something that I was always growing up wanted to be a part of. But like you said, having to buy in, similar with Pokemon, like I never knew like where to start. The internet wasn't as, I don't know, I never even thought to look up like how to start. I'm sure it's much easier to get started now, but yeah, so this is something I always wanted to be involved in and never really did. One of those great what ifs of my childhood. So I may have to give this a look because I play Marvel Snap all day long, every day, so.
Yeah, I think you know, especially if you like stuff like The Witcher and that sort of fantasy realm setting, I think you will find a lot to like here. All right, so Chris, I'm really interested to hear this one. You wrote a review for this comic book for our website, nerdbyword.com, which I really recommend people go and check out because I had not heard of this book, and now it's on my list. I definitely want to check it out. So what have you got?
Well, I want to first and foremost give a shout out to our friend Steve. They had recommended this book to me. They had been clamoring for me to read this for a very, very long time, and I finally did. So I am recommending Do a Power Bomb by Daniel Warren Johnson. Oh, okay. Sorry. I didn't know. Yeah, so I am nerd-commending Do a Power Bomb, which was written and penciled by Daniel Warren Johnson. It was very much his baby. You have Mike Spicer doing the colors and Russ Wooten doing the letters, and you know, to use the pun of professional wrestling, this is a great tag team when it comes to those other two in here as well, because the letters really bring to life the world of professional wrestling. And so you have a young female wrestler who's mild spoilers, because it's literally the first few pages of the comic. You have a tragic accident, not dissimilar to what happened with Owen Hart. Claimed the life of her mother, and her mother was like this legendary wrestler. And I think as someone who has gotten back in full hog in the world of professional wrestling in the past 2 years. It really perfectly encapsulates the spectacle, the fluff, the showmanship of professional wrestling. Not only that, but like the legacy you have, you know, as of time of recording, you have the bloodline scenario about family and legacy and impact, coinciding with Cody Rhodes and his family legacy, and finishing the story that his father left unfinished, his father Dusty Rhodes. And so it, I think it perfectly encapsulates the ideas of family, of legacy, of all of the cool things that bring us to the world of professional wrestling, with surprisingly some like supernatural elements as well, some definitely horror tinged. Like, this is like, what if pro wrestling was through the filter of the Sandman? So it's a completely wild ride, completely emotional. There's elements of how to deal with trauma, how to deal with loss, and like just great, awesome, just rock and roll type of elements. So I definitely recommend you go check the review, see if this is a good fit for you. But I absolutely love this book, and I think it was a perfectly encapsulated 7-issue miniseries, and definitely worth a read, because it won't take long. You'll tear through this and you'll absolutely love it.
This definitely sounds like my jam. Obviously, you know, an old school pro wrestling fan, even though I've kind of lapsed out of it. I'm very, very interested in diving into this one. Ever since I read your review, I'm all about checking this one out. Can't wait, man. It looks really, really interesting.
All right, that wraps our second take on episode 182. If you like what you heard today, please subscribe on your favorite podcasting platform, whether that's Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or nerdbyword.com.
And find us on social media. We'd like to hear who your top favorite video game characters are. You can find us anywhere there's a social media platform. We really truly are all over the place. You generally can find us at Nerd by Word, and individually at That Nerd Dave and at That Nerd Chris. And please don't forget to check out our website, guys. There's a lot of new stuff being uploaded, not just episodes of the pod, but also some think pieces and some reviews as we're diving deeper into the nerd world, even deeper than we can on this weekly show. So feel free to check out nerdbyword.com. Also, for Chris's Do a Powerbomb review, where he gets into great detail about what he found so appealing about the comic book.
And whatever you do, just don't watch Madam Web. It will curse your podcast and you will lose the entire episode. As always, stay well and stay nerdy.
The curse of Madam Web. T-shirt time, Chris. T-shirt time. The curse of Madam Web.
those ghostly tendrils sap the life force on that recording.
The Nerd Byword is written and produced by Chris and Dave, two nerds with a love of all things pop culture. The podcast features music by Al Jimenez, with additional drops composed by Joe Biondi. Our show art is by Ashery Design. Find us at nerdbyword.com and wherever podcasts are available.